Hi, everybody. I'm in a different venue tonight, and I hope that the audio is working properly. It would help to have the fifth ray at this moment in greater abundance than I have it. But I will do the best I can under the circumstances. We are working through esoteric astrology, and we have discussed two statements. The first statement is very surprising because it basically says that astrology is based upon an illusion. The deluding appearances of things as they are, or rather as they seem to be. The next statement seems almost contradictory, that astrology is the greatest and the oldest of all the sciences and the purest form of occultism that we can present at this time. So you wonder if the science is based upon illusion, how it can be the purest form of occult science at this time. And yet the illusion is correlated with all the illusions we have on this planet, including the illusory understanding, the very partial understanding of how our lives work, the qualities, the timing of our life. All of them, in the deeper sense, are illusions as well. So the appearances of astrology, the illusions of astrology, do correlate very well with the illusions we call our daily living process. And we can make sense out of our process of daily living by consulting the positions of the Earth relative to the Sun and the planets relative to the Earth and to the Sun. This has long been proven. Now, we will come to the third statement, and this statement, the Tibetan begins in this way. This brings me to the third statement, which is so basic and fundamental that I would ask you to pause and contemplate it, even though you grasp not its full implications as yet. The ancient wisdom teaching, or the ancient wisdom teaches, that space is an entity. It is with the life of this entity, and with the forces and energies, the impulses and the rhythms, the cycles and the times, and seasons, that esoteric astrology deals. Well, space is the self-perception of the universal logos. This is how, at least, I conceive it after a great deal of thought. Space is a perception. And when the universal logos conceives himself, perceives himself, that consciousness is space. That is one philosophical understanding of universal space. I think there is also what the Tibetan is describing, possibly a supra-universal space, in which case he equates the absolute, the one without a second, the ultimate reality, with space. But I choose to consider space in the first mode of its description as the entirety of the consciousness of the self-consciousness of the universal logos. And when we look at all of these factors, the so-called forces, energies, impulses, rhythms, cycles and times and seasons, these are all the contents of consciousness of the universal logos. These are the differentiated modes that he, it, has of perceiving itself. And space is the entirety of the perception, and the differentiated types of perception are the energies, impulses, rhythms, cycles, times, and seasons. The universal logos emanates itself in decreasing capacities of perception. So every emanation has less capacity for perception than the universal logos per se. That perception is narrowed down increasingly as the process of emanation proceeds. And it is the vibrations, the pulsations of these emanations, their relationship to the fundamental integer gods, the fundamental number deities, that control all process within general space. Well, sometime I will try to elaborate on that in a way that takes it apart bit by bit. But suffice it to say that all that is perceivable by any entity is this one self. And beyond the perception of itself and the consciousness arising from that perception, the contents of consciousness arising from that perception, space does not go. There is no such thing as space outside the self-perception of the one manifest deity in cosmos. Now, this is not the absolute of which I'm speaking. I'm talking about the one point which arises within the absolute. So it is an abstract subject, but let's just say that we have the notion that we are living in one being, and we are that one being, no matter how minuscule we may find ourselves to be. There is no content of consciousness within that one being, which is not the entirety of the one being itself, essentially considered. So no matter what we perceive, it is all the entity. It is all the space of its self-consciousness, so to speak, trying to link these two ideas of space and consciousness. There is nothing that is not alive. There is nothing that is not the one being, essentially. And all illusions are real. In other words, their appearances may not give us the idea of what they essentially are, but beneath their appearances are the one and only reality. Space is an entity. Well might we ponder on this statement for a long time. I've been pondering it for years. The universal logos is that entity, and its own self-perception produces what we call space. So HBB made this statement in The Secret Doctrine, and here DK is saying, I would remind you that there is an astrological key to the secret doctrine which cannot yet be given in completeness. Well, DK has given us a tremendous astrology. He intends to give us more, either following the year 2025 or beginning in that year, and even then we can wonder whether the entirety of the astrological key will be given to us, because I think there is just too much knowledge, too much ability to coordinate all the very process, all the many processes in our local cosmos, perhaps to ends which do not serve the plan. And so it must be given out slowly as humanity is ready. Now, as long as we have been discussing or mentioning the keys to the secret doctrine, let's take a look here. This is one of the footnotes in the Treatise on Cosmic Fire. So every symbol and allegory has seven keys. Only three keys have been available in the 19th century, and there are seven keys to the entrance door of the mysteries. Let's take a look at what some of these keys are to the secret doctrine. They have been hinted. There is the psychological key, and of this, a treatise on cosmic fire is said to be the embodiment. Certainly, it's the beginning of the psychological key to the secret doctrine. DK does state that. There is the astronomical key, which is not the astrological key. The physical or physiological key, the metaphysical key, the anthropological key, the astrological key, the geometrical key, the mystical key, the symbolical key, and the numerical key. Now, this is really interesting because earlier we are told there are seven keys, but we've been given 10. So it's rather Kabbalistic in the sense that wherever there are seven, there are 10. Each key has to be turned seven times, and so we get the numbers either 49 or 70. Now, probably at this stage of our development, not all of us can pursue every one of these keys. We are not equipped to do so. But there may be one key or another which is more suited for our type of mind and consciousness, and it would be very interesting to see which key or keys we may be pursuing as we attempt to penetrate more deeply into the mysteries. I think when you're a student of Master DK, you do tend to work the psychological key quite a bit. The astrological key is also given. I know many people interested in sacred geometry, and I do think they are beginning to turn to that particular key. The mystical key perhaps has been set forth by the great mystics of the last 1,000 years, and there are some notable examples. Many books are filled with the symbology which reveals more to us of the ancient mysteries. There are metaphysicians, those who are into the abstract mind and are trying to understand the mind of God, turning the metaphysical key, the astronomical key, the great scientists, the astrophysicists of the day, are, whether they know it or not, in process of turning this key. And I suppose if we think about turning the keys 7 times, there are 7 principles in man. There are 7 planes upon which each of these keys can be applied. I think what the 7s stand for is not a great mystery, but the exact nature of how each of these keys would be applied, let us say, on each of the 7 planes, or in relation to each of the 7 principles, that, for us, is a mystery at this time. Okay, now we can go back to the text. So, this is in the Secret Doctrine. There is an astrological key to the Secret Doctrine which cannot be given in completeness. I can, however, give you some hints and suggest some lines of approach, and these have carried in the consciousness of the illumined astrologers, and may I say, perhaps carried for many years as a background consideration in the minds of the illumined astrologers, whoever they are, may enable one of them at a later date to discover that key, and then, turning it on behalf of humanity, reveal the 4th great fundamental of the ageless wisdom, of which 3 are already given in the proem of the Secret Doctrine. Now, I think we do remember the 3, that there is a boundless, immutable principle, that there is a law of periodicity to which all forms must submit, and that all souls are at one with the Oversoul. And then the 4th fundamental must be formulated. Some think they have formulated it. I think they've made good progress. I think that until Master DK gives more, and even that will not be enough, I don't think this formula can be fundamental, can be formulated in its entirety. This is my own opinion, but it does relate to psychology and astrology, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if within A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, which is the psychological key to the Secret Doctrine, and within Esoteric Astrology, which goes a long way, I think, in presenting the direction in which the astrological key to the Secret Doctrine will be found, within these 2 books, I would say the foundation of that key is being laid. And in a way, I do wonder if Master DK himself is not that disciple who is turning this 4th key on behalf of humanity and who is formulating this 4th key. He is, after all, a disciple, as is the Christ. I don't think that it can be formulated by those who are beneath the rank of master. And when I look at the other 3 fundamentals of the Secret Doctrine, they also seem to me to be formulated by the very high initiate consciousness. So anyway, space is an entity, and there is an astrological key to the Secret Doctrine. It will involve both psychology and astrology. Let us go further. Space is an entity, and the entire vault of heaven, as it has been poetically called, is the phenomenal appearance of that entity. In a way, space is the universal logos, and its appearance is his own consciousness of himself. And inasmuch as he is aware of all of the different aspects of his own nature which come forth in emanation as a result of the divisibility of number, all of the different energies and forces and impulses are perceived, self-perceived, as contents of consciousness. In other words, what I'm saying here, and I believe it is profoundly true, is that we live in a psychological universe. The universe is a psychic registration, a psychic self-registration. The universe itself is that which consciousness reveals of the perceiver. Now, all of this, you know, you could well say, okay, look, this is part of the metaphysical key of the secret doctrine. I guess, you know, I'm very inclined towards metaphysics. It's that third ray in my nature. So I hope I don't bore you with this, but I'm, you know, trying to get to the bottom of the issue, which is hopeless, of course, but one tries and tries, and eventually one succeeds. He calls it the phenomenal appearance of that entity. You will note that I did not say the material appearance, but the phenomenal appearance. And the phenomena run deeper than materiality. Every event on whatever plane can be called a phenomenon. It is an outpicturing of what we call the noumenon. 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 And I think Kant dealt with the idea of the noumenon, which is the reality, which is underlying the appearance. So he says, speculation about the nature, the history, and identity of that entity is useless and of no value. Well, I guess I've spent years and years of my life in uselessness pursuing that which is of no value. You know, the identity. What is the entity? The entity is the one and only entity in cosmos. But what type of self-divisions has that entity been through? What is the emanatory history of that entity from the one dread point, the absolute point of being, which is that entity? What have been the pathways which have led to all of the complexity and the incredible interrelations that we're only now beginning to perceive? That's what I think is quite useless. In other words, we couldn't possibly trace that. But if we can get some slight idea that in fact it did occur, that emanation has occurred, then at least we know something about the process. Let me move to a picture. Yeah, that's the one. Now, this is a very incomplete picture, but it gives you an idea of how the one, the three, becomes the seven, becomes the many, all in the emanation of septenets. This sevenfold system, which is probably of the cosmic planes, I think, you know, whenever the word K, cosmic, is used, it seems to suggest not the systemic planes, but something much larger, each one of which contains seven systemic planes. I think it's a very abbreviated picture. I think in a way it only goes as far as maybe what we might call our local super-constellational god, the one about whom naught may be said, of which there seem to be several, including the galaxy. But let's just say that this gives us the idea of how it works. In other words, each one of these entities containing the three circles in the middle might be only one of seven, and on and on and on. We don't know how high this can extend. Perhaps there are 10 dimensions to cosmos. DK seems to think so. And if this is the case, we're only dealing, even in this vast map, with maybe the second dimension. So, but it gives you the idea of how emanation proceeds and how every one is only one of seven, which is, and every one of those seven is on, you know, only one of seven. So no matter which one we choose as a one, and it may emanate seven, it's still only one of seven. And so we can begin our multiplication process, and even with this very abbreviated map, we can begin to realize the vastness of the cosmos, of plane within plane within plane. I don't say plane upon plane, I say plane within plane within plane. Far vaster than any human mind can conceive. And that's why, perhaps, speculation about the nature, the history, and identity of that entity is useless and of no value. We can just call it the one God, God of our universe, who we are, that deity in extension, in attenuation. But essentially, we are that. And the great problem in religion today is between those who separate God from man and his creation, and those who realize the transcendent nature of deity, but also realize the immanence of deity. Deity is in all things, and more than that, deity is all things. This is what I would call an enlightened philosophical pantheism. And people become quite red in the face about pantheism. And when you have the statement, I am God, you know, they immediately think you're saying that I, the person, am God, as if you are declaring your own megalomaniacal omnipotence. But it's not that at all. We're talking about essences. And it seems that if we can only understand that there is but one essence, we will be far more advanced in our understanding of the true nature of reality. So he tells us we can't really speculate about this one entity, which he calls space. I call it the universal logos. Some dim idea, providing analogy, even when eluding specifications, might be gained if you will endeavor to think of the human family, the fourth kingdom of nature, as an entity. And we should do that indeed, as constituting a single unit, expressing itself through the many diversified forms of man. You as an individual are an integral part of humanity, yet you lead your own life, you react to your own impressions, you respond to exterior influences and impacts, and in your own turn, you emanate influences, send forth some form of character radiation, and express some quality or qualities. I think it's getting late here, but pressing on. You thereby, and in some measure, affect your environment and those whom you contact. Yet all the while, you remain part of a phenomenal entity to which we give the name of humanity. Well, you know, I would go further. Of course, it is common sense to say we remain part of this phenomenal entity, humanity. But we are not only the part, but we are the whole. Because if we extract the essence and extract the essence and extract the essence, as we achieve freedom from vehicle after vehicle, we re-become the whole we always were. But I think you can see what he's saying here. You know, there is the one emanating source and a number of emanations, and they too are emanators. And he talks about what is the emanation of man, our own character radiation, the quality or qualities we express. We constantly have emanations. And perhaps these rays from us, these emanations, in certain ways live, and our lives in themselves. So anyway, we can extend this idea to a greater phenomenal entity. In other words, the outpicturing of the noumenon, of the central reality, the solar system. We are all parts of the solar system. As a matter of fact, we are said as monads to have our home within the sun. It may not be our ultimate home, but it is probably a penultimate home, a nearly ultimate home. Well, actually, there are many removes, but for the moment, our home is within the sun, and in a way, we are a spiritual ray of the solar logos. And if we retract ourselves along our line of emanation, we shall discover ourselves to be none other than the solar logos, all of us together. Now, this solar system, okay, this entity is itself an integral part of a still greater life, which is expressing itself through seven solar systems, of which ours is one. Now, I believe that this being is called a cosmic logos. And if I can go over here to a treatise on a treatise on cosmic fire, go to page 293, you will see this tabulation, number 2, it's very important, and you will see how DK is ascending from man to a planetary god, a heavenly man, to a solar logos. He's talking about a solar logos is part of something greater. What is it? What is that greater thing? That greater thing is a cosmic logos, which has in it seven solar systems, seven major solar systems. Every one of these entities can have many, many lesser entities within them, but there's always seven major. And on until we reach an entity in which a cosmic logos is simply a chakra, a center. And this entity is called the unknown, and other names for it have been the one about whom naught may be said, but we just cannot think that it ends there. I don't think it does at all. It's just the beginning. If we go back here to this chart on page 344 of Cosmic Fire, I do believe, and there are many differing opinions, okay, but I'm just sharing my own here, that that entity we just called the unknown is that one, that little green one right there, out of which a number of solar logoi come, and then there are seven of these unknowns in a still greater unknown, and seven of these still greater unknowns in a cosmic parabrahm, which we can imagine is only one of seven, and on, until the 10 dimensions of cosmos are fulfilled. So you see, Master DK is giving us some really grand perspectives. He always begins with the big picture. But don't worry, someday we're going to get to the specificities. We can just get through this introduction. Okay, So this entity, that's the solar logos, is itself an integral part of a still greater life, which is expressing itself through seven solar systems, of which ours is one. And as a matter of fact, these seven solar systems are called by an interesting name, the seven solar systems of which ours is one. He actually calls it that. People have differing ideas about what they are, but I think when Nicholas and Elena and I were teaching a class on this subject, we came to the conclusion that the star Sirius would be included, and Alpha and Beta Centauri and Procyon, and Altair, and there are others, maybe Vega. Anyway, they're relatively proximate solar systems. We couldn't possibly see them as a constellation because we're right in the middle of it. We couldn't see them. And Sirius is one of the most important of this system. And so, as a hypothesis and temporarily, we call it the Sirian system of seven major suns. And then we go on, you know, it itself, this seven solar systems of which ours is one, is a cosmic logos. And if we combine seven cosmic logoi, we're going to get a cosmic, a sub-parabrahmic logos, and you know, the words don't make any difference. Suffice that there's going to be seven major aggregations until we reach what DK calls a cosmic parabrahm. Now that's not parabrahm itself, because parabrahm itself is another name for the absolute reality, the one reality, the not the universal logos. Parabrahm is a name for beingness, the ground of all being, the universal essence, that nameless, forever nameless thing. Well, you can't talk about it, out of which all things came. So DK says, if you can grasp this idea, a vague picture of a great underlying esoteric truth will emerge into your consciousness. It is the life and influence, the radiations and emanations of this entity, space again, right, as he conceives it, and their united effect on our planetary life, the kingdoms in nature, and the unfolding human civilizations, which we shall have briefly to consider. This is kind of the outline of his book on esoteric astrology. And it's not so much about the individual. Not really. Although, you know, he's kind enough to feed our little consciousness, which is so concerned about our little self. And he does give us enough individual astrology to whet the appetite. But this is a book written in broad strokes, which attempts to decentralize the reader and to make him understand that he is participating in something much bigger than his individual self. The subject is so vast that I've been faced with the problem of the best method whereby to handle it. I decided on brevity. We're on page 9 now. I decided on brevity, the concise statement of facts to those of us who are working on the inner side of life, but which must rightly be only hypotheses to you, and the avoidance of detail and of detailed discussion. Well, you know, in the mind of the master, right? Because as we read esoteric astrology in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, it's just like, oh my God, the amount of detail is staggering. How can we possibly remember all this? And yet, remember, not even remember it, deal with it, work with it, relate it, correlate it. But to DK, these are concise statements of facts. And I really do think that we are very well advised to put a lot of trust in him, that he is not giving us something which is a hypothesis to him, but proven to him. And if we trust him in one or two things, we might as well trust him in everything. Because I think that through this path of trust in the Master's wisdom, the path of realization for us becomes much more rapid. We have to lay aside some of our pride, some of our rebellion, some of our preferences. We have many things that we have created over long lives, thousands of lives of living in certain ways, and we have our habit patterns. And we have things to protect that are not all that glorious. But if we can just lay those things aside and put trust in the Master's word, the path becomes very direct. But only those who have a degree of humility will be able to do this, and at least where they think it's wrong, what he says, let them at least suspend their judgment for a while, so that they can work their way slowly towards the center, following his suggestions, and perhaps they will see they were wise to suspend their disapproval, their reservations, and their antagonism toward what he says. So anyway, he says he's avoiding detail and detailed discussion. Okay. I remember some person who really didn't like Cosmic Fire. You know, it must have been on a very, very different ray type, and the meticulous entirety of Cosmic Fire was really against the grain. So he said, this book reminds me of a 19th century text in biology, you know, filled with the classifications of all these different species and subspecies and, you know, all the plant names, as dry as can be for this person. But for some of us, it is absolutely one of the most exciting things we could possibly read, because it makes the image of the reality of the universe come alive for us. It's all seen as living fire and not as a dry thing at all. We will endeavor to work from the universal to the particular and from the general to the specific. This is ever the occult way, right? But our emphasis will always be on the universal and the general and not on the particular and the specific. Well, that's at least partially true. I think Master DK sometimes, in his compassion for us, gives us a little more of the particular and the specific than he intended to. But it is his goal to see these things from the big picture. It will rest with those of you who are students of astrology to make due application of the truth to the specific. And of course, we are attempting to do this. To take what we think we understand and step it down so that those who understand still less than we do can understand something, and they will do the same. Until what begins very, very high in the stratosphere of esoteric thought becomes extremely practical application in our life of every day. It is definitely in this connection that modern astrology has gone astray. Here is a little critique. It has reversed the true and right procedure and has laid the emphasis upon the specific and particular, upon the personal horoscope and the individual destiny, and has not laid emphasis upon the great energies and their source. Well, you know, people are so self-absorbed. What's happening to me? What does this mean to me? It's not so much who am I within this larger whole, who is the one in whom I live and move and have my being, and what is the purpose of this one, and what is the purpose of that one in the one in whom he lives and moves and has his being and so forth. We do have myopia, we do have self-centeredness, we care an awful lot about what we see immediately You know, you look in the mirror, what you see is what you get. That's me. Oh, there I am. The I. That is I in the mirror. But of course, it's the outer crust of the true reality. The very periphery of reality. And we have to have occult vision to penetrate beyond the appearances of things as they are. So, what is the source? You know, get to the bottom of it. Go deeper and deeper. Use Pluto, use Mercury. Dig in and lay illusions to either side as things become more and more real to your perception. These great sources, are ultimately responsible for the manifestation of the specific. Of course they are. This position and presentation of truth must be altered. And you know, that's why DK comes along with this marvelous book. And a lot of astrologers pick it up and they throw it down right away, because if he is correct, then what have they been spending their lives upon? What have they been doing with year after year of their life? If he is correct, if the new tenets of esoteric astrology are true, what have they been wasting their time on? Well, I mean, it's not a waste. You learn something. But how limited is the scope? So naturally, they reject, because if your whole life begins to look puny and minuscule and insignificant, the first thing is to reject the source that makes it look that way, rather than achieve some humility or a sense of right proportion. Yes, most of what we do is puny, minuscule, and insignificant. And maybe we will wake up to that fact and embrace a larger picture. In esoteric astrology, we are therefore dealing with the life and the lives which inform the points of light within the universal life. Whoa, now isn't that an incredible statement? Let's underline that, if I can. Let's see. This would require having things in a better position. Okay, let's read that again. In esoteric astrology, we are therefore dealing with the life, the one, and the lives, the many, which inform the points of light, which are all the many beings, within the one universal life. It's nothing but the life and the many lives which are really points. I think it's a big metaphysical problem how to conceive of points within points within points within points within finally the one ultimate point for every universe. As far as reality goes, the ultimate reality, space in the largest sense of the word, it is pointless. Pointless to think about, and pointless. The minute the point appears, you have manifestation, you have lives. And the one point becomes the many point. The one flame becomes the many flames. So this is another one of those incredible statements that one could take into consideration for a year, maybe more, maybe one's whole life. In esoteric astrology, we are therefore dealing with the life and lives which inform the points of light within the universal life. Every deva, every human being, every atom, every electron, every subatomic particle, every ultimate particle event, as I've sometimes called it, is nothing but a point. A point. And how does one differentiate points when they are dimensionless? And yet they are. So this is one of the greatest of the metaphysical problems. Constellations, solar systems, planets, kingdoms in nature, and microscopic man, that's how man should be seen, are all of them the result of the activity and the manifestation of energy of certain lives, whose cycle of expression and whose infinite purposes, well, semi-infinite, I guess, whose infinite purposes lie outside the comprehension of the most advanced and illumined minds on our planet. Well, I guess it's saying beyond Sanat Kumara, beyond the planetary logos. There are certain lives, galactic lives, subgalactic lives, parabrahmic lives, sub-parabrahmic lives, beyond the comprehension of the most advanced and illumined minds on our planet. And all of these lives are points. But every point has a different character. And perhaps a point is most known by the other points which it manages to aggregate around and in relation to itself. So, you know, the essence of a point is absolute, is pure being. But there are differentiations between points, and points are known by their aggregations. And I'm sure they are geometrical aggregations. It is a great metaphysical question. What is the living point? So that's the big picture DK is giving to us. Ah, the next point. Okay. The next point for each of you to grasp is the fact that the ether of space is the field in and through which the energies from the many originating sources play. Well, what is ether? Is it only our systemic ethers? Let's go over here. See, I mean, the systemic ethers are found here. Are these the ethers of space? Well, for practical purposes and in relation to the physical plane, they are. But what about all the many dimensions of our solar system, of which there are seven? Here are more ethers, okay? These are the cosmic ethers, the ethers of space. And they also carry energies of a cosmic nature and produce the phenomena, although very subtle, on these higher planes, which are the highest objective of our spiritual aspiration. But, well, is that the end of the ethers? Okay, let's go back here. What about these four? Here you have seven cosmic planes. The higher four of these cosmic planes are not the cosmic ethers, they are the super cosmic ethers. And energies from even greater lives, inconceivable to us, inconceivable perhaps even to our planetary logos, play within these super cosmic ethers. But since this super cosmic plane is the super cosmic physical plane, we can go higher to the super cosmic astral, super cosmic mental, super cosmic buddhic, blah, blah, blah. And then we have super, super cosmic ethers, and on until 10 dimensions of space, of the universal logos, are satisfied. Whatever an ultimate dimension really is. So anyway, for practical purposes, we know something about our bioelectric field, and lots of astrological energies reach us through this bioelectric field, but we should not discount the cosmic ethers, the buddhic, atmic, monadic, logoic planes, because energies of tremendous importance are reaching the higher aspects of our nature through those ethers. They are ethers too. Just like you say, well, where's Shambhala? Well, Shambhala's in the ethers. Well, there are things that are said by HBB and DK which make you think, hey, Shambhala has somehow penetrated, precipitated, even to to the systemic ethers, quite close to the physical plane, and will be revealed as the white island in the Gobi Desert upon ethers we can recognize as ethers. But the real placement of Shambhala is higher, upon the cosmic ethers. And Sanat Kumara has his focal point, as far as the cosmic physical plane is concerned, on the logoic plane, which is the highest of the cosmic ethers. So let us not discount the cosmic ethers when we're thinking of ethers, because they really do affect very important aspects of our nature, which we are reaching toward, but we can discount, as far as humanity is concerned anyway, the super cosmic ethers. That much we can do. We'll have maybe just a little more. So I've explained something about the multiple levels of the ether. So space is the field, and the field is not just a physical field, it's a very subtle field through which in and through which the energies from many originating sources play. And you kind of wonder, we call them originating sources, but what is their origin and what is their origin? And we take it back until there must be one source. We are therefore concerned with the etheric body of the planet, of the solar system, and that certainly is going to involve the cosmic ethers, and of the seven solar systems of which our system is one, as well as with the general and vaster etheric body of which the universe, of the universe in which we are located. So that just shows you that the word universe is not meant here to mean the entirety of cosmos. No. We are located in a local universe, and I call that the one about whom naught may be said. And the seven solar systems, I call that the cosmic logos. I employ the word located here, he says, with deliberation and because of the inferences to which it leads. The vaster field, as well as the smaller and more localized fields, provides the medium of transmission for all the energies which play upon and through our solar system, our planetary spheres, and all forms of life upon those spheres. It forms one unbroken field of activity, in constant ceaseless motion, an eternal medium for exchange and transmission of energies. Well, next time I'm going to begin with this. It needs time to discuss, but I would like us to be able to say the great invocation together. When you think about points, think about this invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center, where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center, which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Om. Thank you, everyone. We will go on with our esoteric astrology adventure number 5, and we will take up the location of all these entities within the vaster field of space. And don't worry, all the abstract stuff will not last forever, and we'll get into those nuts and bolts which we all want to know about. So, until then, farewell.